Hey there, welcome. This is This Week in Pharmacy. Did I just say this twice? This week. This is This Week in Pharmacy. That's a horrible opening. My name's Todd Urey. I'm the founder of the Pharmacy Podcast. I'm your host of This Week in Pharmacy. I'm not going to say this twice. Wow. This has been an interesting week. There's a lot happening in the news, which we're going to get to. We're getting ready for the Asembia event, the Super Bowl of Specialty Pharmacy Business Event of the Year in Vegas on April 29th through May 2nd. We've welcomed 10 new clients that are leveraging our public relations and communication services through podcasting and social media amplification. This has been an exciting time for us. It's been a wonderful first quarter. As we enter the second quarter of 2024, can you believe how fast this time, this year is going? I'm excited to be part of pharmacy. I hope you are. I hope that you have hope that things are getting better. I know that I can see things getting better and see things improving for our pharmacists and our technicians in workforce maturity and workforce design, as well as some things that are happening in retail community pharmacy with unionization. There's a lot to talk about, but on This Week in Pharmacy, I'd like to jump right into the Pharmacy Podcast Network and say, if you haven't heard about NasoCleanse and the podcast that just came out yesterday, it was called Gateway to Health, starring the nose. And Dr. Gail Lebovic talks with Daniel Adams. He's a multi-location pharmacy owner out of New Zealand. And you know what they talk about? They talk about the importance of nasal health and how that's connected to dementia and to Alzheimer's disease and what can happen if the nasal passages are not cleaned properly, and nose picking, which is gross, but I'm sure we've all been guilty of it one time or another. But take a listen. If you aren't a Pharmacy Podcast Network subscriber, we have 42 active podcasts by over 50 different hosts, building series, building continuing education, and also building a lot of knowledge around what's coming in pharmacy. Maternal Rx, Dr. Daniel Plummer just interviewed Dr. Katie Wood, an integrative fertility coach, nourishing your path to pregnancy. This is an exciting episode for pharmacists out there who might not understand IVF or fertility and how that impacts our overall health when you're preparing men and women when you're preparing for being parents and having kids. Hey, dementia care discussion with guest host Laura Herman is part of the Long-Term Care Pharmacy Podcast. Don't miss that one. Dr. Ruggles and Dr. Stewart, both PharmDs, are experts in long-term care pharmacy, and we're so excited that they've chosen the Pharmacy Podcast Network as a partner of their audio publication. The final episode of the APHA post show, the APHA podcast post show, went out this week, and it's the finale of the 5-part series. That's right. This is a record-setting coverage of a national conference with 5 parts. We're so excited of how popular the Pharmacy Podcast Network, and more importantly, the voice of our pharmacists and our business professionals has been. Please take a listen to that series. And if you follow me on LinkedIn, that's Todd, T-O-D-D, last name Urey, E-U-R-Y. You can actually follow all of the content that the Pharmacy Podcast Network is pushing out. Hey, I tell you what, there's so much happening. Let's talk pharmacy news, This Week in Pharmacy News. I want to start off telling you that today's news is brought to you by Lumacera. Lumacera is also going to be supporting the Pharmacy Podcast Network at the Asembia 2024 event. They're going to be talking about healthcare services and innovative specialty pharmacy solutions. Definitely the place to be when you're going to Asembia. We can't wait to talk with the Lumacera team. Definitely tap into Pharmacy Podcast Network content and also our social media. Follow us on social media at Pharmacy Podcast and follow us during this event. We also want to say thank you to Assessia Health. They're also going to be supporting us in a featured interview about building better payment systems, financial assistance for health insurance premiums, and how expensive specialty pharmacy and rare disease, the financial crush that this can put on people's lives. Having someone like Assessia Health in your corner is so vitally important. But like I said, let's talk news right now and get into our first article. So jumping right in, Rexall launches first pharmacist care walk-in and clinic in Barrie. And just want to jump up and say Barrie, Oregon, Rexall is proud to unveil its first pharmacist care walk-in clinic in Barrie, Ontario on Friday. It's exciting to hear that this is expanding. This just happened today in Ontario. And the reason why I'm mentioning this is independent community pharmacies, our long-term care pharmacies, and our privately owned specialty pharmacies all have the ability to build these clinics in partnering with organizations that can actually turnkey clinic models for you. If you're interested in a clinic model, you are a pharmacy owner, it doesn't matter which setting. If you want your community, which is in desperate need of healthcare services, reach out to me. Go to LinkedIn, go to our website, pharmacypodcast.com. I will get you in touch with three different organizations, all helping community, privately owned long-term care, privately owned specialty pharmacy, build these clinics. This is huge. And by the way, long-term care at home is going to explode. So these kind of clinics and extension services are going to have to reach people where they are, which is in their home. So let's talk about that. All right. Drug Topics reported just today. The title of the article is Artificial Intelligence Guided Care Plans Streamline Workflow and Improve Patient Care. And what they're talking about is how Jay Patel, PharmD, and the CEO of Ivera Health is using artificial intelligence in his businesses, which is six community pharmacies and a specialty pharmacy license in 30 states and infusion centers. He is beginning to use AI even more so in his business. I want you to read this article from Drug Topics. Once again, go to drugtopics.com and look up Jay Patel in the search, or search the title, which is AI Guided Care Plans, Streamline Workflow and Improve Patient Care. Are you using AI in your pharmacy in any way? We are using it in our publication. We are going to different systems like ChatGPT, but we actually use one that's actually powered by Google. And we're starting to collect massive amounts of good information in order to write copy that supports podcasts and supports our clients' messages that will actually reference websites. And this is crazy. So not only are you able to put down the subject, maybe you say something like, what's the latest in hyperlipidemia treatment in the state of Ohio? And if you can find a website that references that, this Google AI will actually pull that information into what you've asked it to write. And the more specific you are, the better. So that's how we're using AI. How are you using AI? Why don't you send us a note? Look for us on any of the social platforms, Instagram, Twitter, even on LinkedIn. Send me a note how you're using artificial intelligence, because we'd like to do a podcast panel discussion with community, specialty, long-term care, and even compounding pharmacy about how does AI apply to those very specific sectors of pharmacy. All right. The latest in our news is titled Worst We've Ever Seen. Pensacola Pharmacist Describes Prescription Drug Shortages. And this is, once again, drug shortages are rearing their ugly head. Once again, it's something that there seems like it's going in cycles. This is by News 3 out of Pensacola, Florida. It says the U.S. is experiencing the worst prescription drug shortages in a decade. The American Society of Health Systems say that 323 prescription drugs could run out. Larger pharmacies like Walmart, Rite Aid, and Target have reported having trouble filling some prescriptions for patients. And it goes on to say how ADHD medications, weight loss medications are in short supply, and how this is impacting, obviously, the care for our patients and getting them on medications as quickly as possible after prescribed. What do you think? What is the solution? Is this having your massive wholesalers' attention to the manufacturers? Is it going to the manufacturer and negotiating? Is it a way of giving heads up based on the data that's coming out of your pharmacy management systems? Or when you pass that information, where does this lie that we can be more predictive, that we can show suppliers, AKA our manufacturers, of what's coming in 90 days ahead of time so that they know that there's going to be a demand on production and upping production? I don't know. I don't have the answers, but if you do, if you know about manufacturing and if you know about drug shortages and how to try to overcome them, reach out to the Pharmacy Podcast Network. We would love to do a special This Week in Pharmacy on drug shortages. All right, we are going to get ready for two amazing interviews, one with fellow host of the Pharmacy Podcast Network. She's going to be my co-host in a discussion about fertility. It's glass half full versus glass half empty. Some people say infertility and some people say fertility. And you'll hear from three dynamic pharmacists on this discussion, as well as our sponsor of today's episode, which is Rx Preferred Benefits. We'll be talking about their mission in supporting community pharmacies, as well as specialty, privately owned specialty pharmacies. You're not going to want to miss This Week in Pharmacy this week. My name is Todd Urey. I'm your host, and I work for you. I work for the pharmacist, the technician, and I want to uncover and dig into topics that are most important to you. Reach out to me. And with that, we're going to get on with today's show. Hey, on This Week in Pharmacy, this is an exciting time of year for the Pharmacy Podcast Network because we're getting back into conference season. And conferences are so important to come together and be able to talk with each other about barriers to patient health, patient care. So many. And then what's happening, what's working, what's not working, how we can improve delivery of pharmacy services and care services and coordination of services. And if you haven't been living under a rock, and I know, listeners, you're some of the most educated people in the pharmacy profession, you know that the pharmacy benefit manager is going through a very aggressive, some might even say a violent transformation, because our state funded systems are private funded systems. These are all becoming much too stressed based on current models. I've been in the pharmacy industry celebrating my 20th year in 2024, and I've seen some mavericks, some entrepreneurs bring products and bring services to the table to help change things long, long ago, before the word PBM was such a popular media news piece as it is today. And it's exciting to see companies like Rx Preferred Pharmacy Benefits become such a powerful force in building the future of what a PBM is supposed to be doing. And it's almost like it's bringing it back to the way it was when PBMs started being called benefit administrators back in the 80s. Some of you listeners might be obviously too young to remember that, but you know, to have that creativity and to have that poise and to have that focus in connecting a payment organization with service and with pharmacist expertise and with coordination between physicians, treatment, the prescribing, and then the delivery of the actual medication treatment. This is such an important part of our ecosystem. We are getting ready for Asembia. Asembia is coming. It's called Access 24. I'm so excited that the Pharmacy Podcast Network will be press and media coverage. We will be in our booth is going to be 1828, and we are going to be featuring some of the most innovative people in specialty pharmacy. I can't wait to talk to We have 32 interviews that we're lining up, and it really just goes to show how important and how the evolution of the pharmacy benefit manager is so tied into specialty pharmacy with the expense around specialty pharmacy medications and treatments. I want to welcome to This Week in Pharmacy my special guest, and I can't wait to meet this guy in Vegas. Zach, welcome to This Week in Pharmacy.
Appreciate it, Todd. Excited to be here and excited to see you in Vegas in a couple of weeks. It should be a great show.
So tell our listeners a little bit about your background and what you're doing at Rx Preferred.
Sure. So I am the Senior Director of Revenue Operations at Rx Preferred. I lead our sales and business development teams across our different lines of business. So anything from our commercial PBM services to 340B administration, rebate administration, specifically the manufacturer rebates, and then hospice, long-term care, and some additional cash solutions that we work specifically with independent pharmacies on.
Specialty pharmacy, we want to shout out to you and your team, Brianna and Megan, for putting together a very special support for the Pharmacy Podcast Network when we're at the show. And the reason why it's important to me is, as I was saying, the ecosystem of specialty medication management, if you don't have an organization that is working alongside in parallel with our pharmacists, with our technicians, with our administrators that really understand the insides of rare disease and what that means for delivering medications, medication adherence, making sure that payment isn't slowing down actual treatment, Rx Preferred is special because you've been tied into it. Instead of building it from an administrator's perspective and from a revenue management perspective, you actually started your blueprints from a pharmacist care perspective, which is that's where it belongs. So talk to us a little bit about why Rx Preferred is so different.
Yeah, I think that you mentioned it in the intro, Todd, that it's really about restoring what the original purpose of a PBM was supposed to be. And that's to negotiate discounts with pharmacies, to be a payer, and to be able to really administrate a plan on behalf of an employer or a plan sponsor. And over the last, 10 to 20 years, the model has gotten away from that. It's been so riddled with conflicts of interest, and independent pharmacies and independent specialty pharmacies have been really, taken advantage of and kind of cast out in this current healthcare system. And so when Rx Preferred started back in 2011, again, fully owned and operated by independent pharmacy, the model was to restore that purpose, to be able to, make healthcare more localized, right? Keep money in the local community and really work with plan sponsors in a way that was void of conflict of interest so that they can do what's best for their organizations, for their members, to be able to get, great accessibility to healthcare at appropriate cost and not doing it at the expense of independent pharmacies. I don't know if you saw this, Todd, but I think last week or a couple of weeks ago, Becker's put out a report that said that 32% of independent pharmacies are looking to close by the end of 24. And NCPA took a survey that validated that number. And I mean, that's an insane and terrifying number for our healthcare industry, right? I mean, think about the pharmacy deserts out there. So transparency is really needed, and Rx Preferred wanted to be at the forefront of that movement.
Do you know what Rx Preferred has done? I've watched it since 2011. I said before we started recording to Zach, I knew Mr. Jeff Malone long, long ago. Makes me feel old. But I knew right from the get-go that he proved this. I remember looking at an Excel spreadsheet before your website has become as fancy as it is today. This is back in just Excel spreadsheet day. But he was able to show that there's no reason that a PBM can make money, support the patient, pay the services to the dispensing pharmacy, and still have money left over in the form of revenue and profit. And it's an ecosystem that's so parallel and so exact, and it's nothing like the three major PBMs that, once again, and this is my strong opinion that's shared with millions of people in healthcare, it's just run amok. It's just gotten too profit-sided, and it's become unbalanced. And Rx Preferred is that balanced PBM, because you're putting the care first, making sure the care happens, and then you're making sure that the pharmacist is getting paid, and then you're making sure that there's like room for administration, some adjustments, and then you guys make some money. And I'm like, all right, that's not rocket science.
It's a win-win situation, and it should be simple, right? Unfortunately, the way that our healthcare system is today, it is very opaque, right? There are a lot of hidden games. There's a lot of those conflicts of interest that I mentioned. That's what the healthcare system has been built on now. And so in order to change that, we really have to revolutionize the way that we look at pharmacy benefits altogether. So it is a major shift. These aren't small changes that we're making. It's really entirely philosophical adjustments with how to run a PBM.
So, all right, let's talk about the key word, which is transparency. And even our lobbying groups that are doing nothing but trying to protect their interest without really focusing on the patient, they'll use words like transparency, and it's just a buzzword because it's not true transparency. So let's define true transparency for the listener.
Yeah, it does get thrown around a lot right now. Everybody says that they're transparent. So the way that we define transparency is really with two things. The first is data access. And that's with real-time claim information. It's with showing exactly what pharmacies are paid on behalf of plan sponsors. That kind of reporting and transparent data detail is really important. It's the client's data too. And so they should have access to it. You'd be shocked at how many employers, are paying their PBMs a lot of money and they can't even see what they're paying for. And they don't know that pharmacies are being taken advantage of. They just don't have the understanding. There's an education component to pharmacy benefits. And so, they don't know that independent pharmacies are underwater or being excluded from, narrow networks and, have those kind of pricing issues, DIR fees, et cetera. And so that data access is first and foremost, the core to transparency. And the second is control. If you can use your data to be able to make informed decisions about pharmacy benefits and actually put those decisions into play, that is transparency, right? If data is king, but if you don't use the data or you're not allowed to use the data, then does it have a lot of value? I don't know. Right. So when we talk with our plans and we bring in, independent pharmacy owners and talk about, building community health plans, we want to look at it holistically. We want to talk about what drives value and is long-term sustainability, but we also want to put them in the driver's seat and be able to say, hey, here's the data to support this. We want you to make this decision.
So if we're guesstimating at 18,000 independently owned individual pharmacies throughout the country with 30%, possibly closing up, which, like you said, it's a nightmare because there's going to be communities that are going to have no healthcare services for miles and miles away. And they rely on their community pharmacy for so many simple things that even fall outside of medication management,
right?
Just basic health insurance. And the closest health provider in that entire community is that community pharmacist. So I have always been pro-independent from my very beginning when I entered pharmacy in 2004, when I helped privately owned long-term care pharmacies leverage technology, build workflows. So when I'm thinking of our community pharmacies, they're not their grandfather's pharmacy anymore. They've become more intelligent. They're using more technology. I shouldn't say more intelligent because they were all intelligent, but they're more efficient in what they're doing for their patients. And a lot of our high performing independent community pharmacies are looking for these partnerships that they can say, hey, Zach, go to me, to the school board, to my local school. Let's do a presentation for our entire school system as to how we can control costs, even lower costs, and have several local independent pharmacies inside this little network that the school system can take full advantage of and not be restricted to using only certain pharmacies that are, obviously we know the tricks, Zach, pharmacies that are either closed door, mail order, owned by the PBM, very restrictive, very controlled on formulary, just for the sake of making sure that the brand is being used because of the rebate game. So talk to us about partnering with independent community pharmacies throughout the nation.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to touch on that last point that you made. It's a really vertically integrated market right now, right? Insurer owns the PBM, that owns the pharmacy, that owns their specialty pharmacy, that now owns the provider networks. So they're really controlling that patient all the way from the time that they go into the doctor's office until the time that they get their prescription, which, you know, then you're having, you know, four or five different layers that are paying themselves, controlling everything from formulary to pharmacy network to data and pricing. And so it is something that needs to be broken out. And we work with independent pharmacies across the country to help, you know, approach local employers. So a lot of them have great relationships within the local community and have been serving patients for, you know, 30, 40 years, right? And so they know those people better than anybody. And the key is to be able to come at it from the pharmacy standpoint. When we work with an independent pharmacy, I want them to be the expert in the pharmacy side. Mm-hmm. Talk to what their experience is. You know, a lot of the employers don't know that independent pharmacies are being squeezed out. It's not their core job, you know, essentially to be able to always, you know, keep an eye on their health benefits, right? A lot of people use it as like a, you know, I got to check this box. And a lot of them will hit the easy button then because it's difficult. And so we want pharmacies to be able to communicate some of the struggles that they go through. And then we can come in and help them develop that solution. So here's what, you know, here's what you're currently doing within this market, right? Heavily mandated mail order, conflicts within PBMs owning their own specialty pharmacy or steering towards higher cost drugs for rebate purposes. As you said, we can help, you know, communicate. Here's the issues. And then here's the opposite. It doesn't have to be this way. Here's a PBM that comes at it from a zero conflict of interest strategy. So you know that when we're helping you to create your plan, that we're not doing it for financial reasons. We're doing it to be able to help your members afford their healthcare.
Yep. Makes sense. Zach, you and I are pretty excited about the 20th anniversary of the Asembia gathering. This is called, I've named it, so I'm going to tag this. It should be hashtag Super Bowl of specialty pharmacy events, and it brings together over 7,000 attendees that are all focused on better specialty pharmacy care. We're going to be talking technology. We're going to be talking networks. We're going to be talking hub services. We're going to be talking PBM and rare diseases and artificial intelligence and digital therapeutics and the rise of that. So I am so excited. I remember when these guys, the family that started this, Armada Health, used to be called, and now it's transformed into Asembia ASX Access 24, where they're as press and your organization is a big part of this. You're going to be our media and press sponsors. Tell our listeners what your goals are for this event.
Yeah, we're really excited about Asembia this year. We work with independent pharmacies and specialty pharmacies in a few different capacities. Right now, we're really talking about a lot of, obviously, always the PBM and 340B administration capabilities, but we've also developed manufacturer rebate programs for pharmacies to be able to capture new revenue on previously uncaptured claims. And so that's an area that we've got a lot of interest from specialty pharmacies, and we want to help them, especially, you know, again, independent specialty pharmacies to be sustainable in this market. So new ways of, you know, new revenue streams for them, new opportunities to be involved in their community within healthcare. So, you know, allowing them to be able to negotiate directly with plan sponsors. So doing things like direct contracting is an important discussion topic that we'll be reviewing with pharmacies. So it's an exciting time. You know, there's kind of no shortage of solutions that we can work on with independents, and it's all driven to be able to lower healthcare costs and push towards more community-owned plans.
If you're listening to this show, whether it's on podcast or if you're watching us on YouTube, reach out to Zach on LinkedIn. He has a great profile there. His last name is Hansen, H-A-N-S-O-N, Zach, Z-A-C. So Zach Hansen, reach out to him, schedule some time with him and the team at Asembia Access 2024. I'm so excited about this. You're going to be in booth 1507, so 1507. Reach out to Zach and their team. So tell us about other things that you're excited about around this conference. I know that you and I, neither of us are clinicians, but is there anything else that you look forward to learning and or doing when you're at Asembia?
Yeah, the pharmacy benefits environment is always evolving. So there's a lot of buzz around biosimilars right now.
Yep.
We're personally very excited about working on different biosimilar strategies and really relocalizing healthcare and that specifically meaning bringing specialty from a PBM owned specialty, which almost exclusively it is in today's market with 80% managed by the top three PBMs, so the big three. Right. And so we're looking at taking specialty drugs and putting it back into the retail channel. So most pharmacies aren't aware that, you know, they can be a part of that retail network. It's been taken away from them for so long now that's a big initiative. And so we're excited about learning about, you know, the new biosimilars that are coming out, learning about those strategies that some of the specialty pharmacies, you know, these independent pharmacies are so well versed, you know, and so such great, you know, pillars in healthcare that they bring so much value. You know, we really want to be able to, you know, help amplify that messaging that they have. So it should be a great show.
It's going to be a great show. If you're listening, if you're watching on YouTube, take a look at rxpreferred.com. Once again, that's rxpreferred.com. Make sure you reach out to Zach, schedule some time with them. Talk about strategy, talk about what Zach and the team's going to help you with is identifying what kind of privately owned organizations in your community are the best, lowest hanging fruit to really engage in and build that business so that you're insulating the attrition of business that's the tricks of the three big PBMs right now. And Rx Preferred puts you first as a pharmacy care professional. They trust you. They trust that you have the best interest of your communities, and they're backing you up with all of this technology, all of this infrastructure, all of this knowledge of so many years of being in the PBM business. Zach, I'm proud of partnering with Rx Preferred because I believe in what you guys are doing, and I believe it's in the best interest of public health. And I wish you safe travels to Vegas. I don't like Vegas, by the way. I've been to Vegas way too many times. No. It's not my gig. But I don't like the per se Vegas. I wish we were in Palm Springs or San Diego or something like that. But what I do love is meeting people like you and people like Jeff Malone and people that are very vested, and they're putting health care, they're putting the care of health care first.
Yeah.
Care and health. Don't hashtag that. It's probably not going to go anywhere. But I'm excited. I want to say thank you to the Rx Preferred team once again for being our sponsor. And hey, thanks for joining me on This Week in Pharmacy.
Yeah, Todd, we really appreciate the partnership as well. We're excited about Asembia. It's going to be great. I'm looking forward to seeing you there and seeing all the different specialty pharmacies and independent pharmacies out there. So come see us at booth 1507. We're really looking forward to expanding our partnership. And you know, like our tagline is we're looking to transform healthcare with our transparent solutions. So it's gonna be great.
All right, Zach. We will see you in Vegas at Asembia 2024.
All right. Thanks, Todd.
This episode is sponsored by Independent Pharmacy Cooperative, widely known as IPC. Established in 1983, IPC is the nation's largest group purchasing organization owned by Independent Pharmacy. With a mission of maximizing the success of community pharmacists, IPC works to provide members with access to effective programs and services designed to enhance profitability for independent pharmacy. Read more about our mission by checking out our website at ipcrx.com. That's IPCRX.com. RX.com.
Hey, and on This Week in Pharmacy, I have three special guests, and what do you know, they're pharmacists, my favorite providers. And before we get into that, I want to just jump out right in the beginning and say this is National Infertility Awareness Week, or we like to say National Fertility Awareness Week. And the need for more affordable fertility treatments is out there. Approximately 9% of men, 11% of women of reproductive age in the United States have experienced fertility problems. And according to the National Institute of Health, for many such individuals, the cost of fertility medications can be a major roadblock. We are attending the Asembia 2024 Specialty Pharmacy Conference coming up at the end of the month, and we will be discussing fertility and having some experts in our booth 1828 right across from the Asembia's main booth. I am so excited today. I get a co-host today. I'm not by myself this time. The one and only Dr. Danielle Plummer, who oversees our Maternal RX podcast. Danielle, I'm so excited you're here.
I am so excited to be here along with the three of you, because this is a topic that, because I did not personally experience, that I had to learn afterwards about during my journey as a pharmacist and one of my many jobs within the world of pharmacy as a surgery center consultant where I had fertility centers. But before we get started, I know the three of us that are on here have other full-time work. So I just wanted to put that disclaimer out there that any views and opinions expressed here are solely those of our own and do not represent those of our employers or any other associations for which we are affiliated. And what we bring to the table is our own expertise, and we do so in a personal capacity. We are also not getting paid for this. So now that that's on the table and out there, I do want to give a couple shout outs. You just, Todd, put video up for Dr. Katie Wood, an integrative fertility coach. And she was my most recent guest on the Maternal RX podcast. And we're airing this because the timing is absolutely just perfect for this week. She's been through this herself, and now her full-time role is working with women who and families, all right? It's always not just the woman alone. It's an entire community that goes, the family, the friends, the work environment for many of us, right, that have to support that woman through the journey. So please go ahead, take a listen to this Nourishing Your Path with Dr. Katie Wood on the Maternal RX podcast on your favorite podcasting platform. And Todd, thank you for putting that one up there. I also want to give a shout out to a colleague, a classmate of mine, Dr. Jackie Schibold, for those looking for other methods of infertility that we will not touch upon in the following conversation is the Creighton method as a Creighton University graduate. I did not learn about it, actually learned it through Jackie, and that's one of her many roles in pharmacy as well. So check that out if you're looking for alternative methods about learning about your body and becoming pregnant. But I want to start with the definition. What is infertility? So the World Health Organization and the CDC use the same one, and it says infertility is a disease of the male or female reproductive system defined by the failure to achieve a pregnancy after 12 months or more of regular unprotected sexual intercourse. Now, Lally here actually updated me. It's been a big talk in this space. And Lally, I don't know if you want to introduce yourself first and then go ahead and talk about what is this new definition of infertility?
Sure, I'd be more than happy to. First of all, thank you, Danielle and Todd, for having me on today. I think everyone that knows me knows that I love to talk about fertility. So my name is Lally Havern. I am a clinical pharmacy strategy director for Walgreens, and I am responsible for our strategy when it comes to fertility, oncology, and transplant. So as Todd's mentioning, we do have a wide variety of resources for patients going through the fertility journey. And so I'm more than happy to discuss that if you want to connect with me or check out our website that Todd's showing. But yes, as part of an update that the ASRM recently did, which is the American Society of Reproductive Medicine, so they're really members of the fertility community, the physicians, the providers, but they released an update back in October of 2023. And how they classify infertility is the inability to achieve a successful pregnancy based on the patient's medical, sexual, and reproductive history, age, physical findings, diagnostic testing, or a combination of those factors. Now, you notice I did not say man or woman. And so that really is the most important part. You know, the old definitions are very heteronormative, wife, husband, can't have a family. And we know that that's just not representative of our communities anymore. And so really the fact that this is open to a single woman that wants to have a child, same-sex couple that want to build their families. So really just being inclusive to the entire community. We were so excited about that update. It's going to help us get more coverage. As Todd mentioned, a lot of states are now passing additional laws, and this helps getting additional people covered under those laws. So very, very excited about that updated definition.
Lally, is there a timeline in that definition, like the one that the WHO and CDC uses, 1 year?
Yes, it still does talk about the 35 and cutoff before 35 and after. And we just know that, right? Any individual assigned birth at female at 30 is really when the fertility starts to tank. And so, yeah, if you're in that age range, we do want you to take a little bit more of, you know, a faster approach to things. Yeah, I don't know that you would want to wait, but I think the conversation just expands against more of just the traditional couple seeking fertility benefits. And so when we talk about social egg freezing, for example, we still want a woman that's maybe delaying her childbearing years due to a profession or a lifestyle to kind of get tested and understand her fertility. So I just think it opens up for that conversation. But yeah, we know historically at around 30, 35, fertility will start to decline, unfortunately.
So age-wise, but after my conversation with Dr. Katie Wood, like she was young, she was healthy and thought she could, you know, many of us, oh, I'll stop using whatever birth control, or if I was never on it, I could get pregnant easily. And her doctor said, no, you have to wait a year. And that was based on the old definition. Is there any timeline? So like they delayed getting her labs. They delayed getting her a lot of interventions for like almost a whole year. And she stood up, they would have, but she spoke up and said, no, something's not quite right. What can I do? And asked for those labs and asked for those treatments. So I like that the labs were part of that new definition and you don't have to wait 12 months then to start having interventions.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's still a barrier, right? Like I've seen insurances say, like, you need 12 IUIs before we will cover an IVF, even though maybe you have a blocked tube or it's not going to help. Like there's so many archaic things that our patients still have to go through, which is why I appreciate like the work that Katie's doing. I wish when I was going through it, I had a fertility coach to kind of help me through, because you don't know what you don't know. And yeah, absolutely. We need advocates.
And before we move on, and Elise, I can't wait to hear what you have to say as well. Yeah. The reason this National Infertility Awareness Week, I just want to give a shout out to the organization that created this. And it's literally National Infertility Awareness Week, a movement founded in 1989 by Resolve. I had not heard of this before as well. So I imagine many of our listeners out there have not either, and want to give them a big shout out, because their statement on their website is, all too often myths and misinformation appear in media stories and influence lawmakers and companies to enforce policies that create barriers to people struggling. And Lally, you just mentioned one of them. So thank you for this organization that has created this. And here we are decades later talking about it, still facing a lot of the same barriers.
I also want to say I'm excited to have a star on, a fellow podcaster with us as well. I'm just excited. I can't believe that we get Elise Fields, Dr. Fields, to participate, because you're a fellow podcaster, and just as Danielle and I are. So we got three podcasters on the show all at once. I think this might be a record. So welcome.
Thanks, Todd. Yeah, and I actually want to just echo what you were sharing, Dr. Plummer, or Danielle, as I know you, about reproductive endocrinologists not necessarily having the latest information. And archaic, as Lally had shared. My backstory is, in 2019, I was undergoing treatment for fertility preservation, and they had stimulated my ovaries and had extracted the oocytes. And 3 hours after the procedure, I was given a call to say that they had discarded all of my oocytes or eggs. And that was a horribly traumatizing experience. And it seemed to have come out of left field. And trying to understand, I had follow-ups with my reproductive endocrinologist who had been overseeing my care. And this physician had shared that he wouldn't have done anything differently except maybe have me stop taking one medicine I had been taking before they had started. And it seemed kind of off to me, and as well to my husband, who doesn't know much about healthcare, but he just could read the physician and felt like he's got deer in the headlights look. And so I saw consults from additional reproductive endocrinologists, and the two or three I had consulted all had said they would have done my trigger medicines differently. And so it came down to medication error. And I'm a pharmacist, and I'll be honest with you, I had blindly trusted in the system that this is the right thing to do, having no knowledge whatsoever, working full time. And what that taught me is that as a pharmacist, A, I should be educated, and B, that just because your physician is board certified, residency educated, trained, and in the field working doesn't necessarily mean they're keeping up to date either. So I took it upon myself to create a podcast sharing the latest evidence-based research to empower those struggling with fertility to educate themselves. So I try to select a different topic that is digestible, something that they can ponder, potentially bring back to their care team. So that's the gist of how I created my podcast. And happy ending is after 4 years of struggle with infertility, I now have my wonder baby who is the light of my life.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Hey, let me ask a quick question of the three of you. And this is just me from a consumer perspective, non-clinical question. I spent 4 years in addiction recovery that worked. I worked with, alongside physicians, pharmacists, nurse practitioners, and counselors in medication-assisted treatment centers. There were 82 across the nation that I was a director of strategy for. I only made it to maybe 20 of the 80. But in those regions, when we inserted a pharmacist, it changed things. And it changed the attitudes, it changed the stigma, because the patient felt like they were being treated more clinically than being judged. And they really liked it. And plus the pharmacists were nerdy, as you always are. And they started digging into polypharmacy, and they were like, but what about the other medications that you're taking? Which most of the time in a lot of these MAT centers, that was never really being asked. Now, counselors, pharmacists, and even some of our physicians that had experienced either a long amount of time of having experience in addiction, two, experienced addiction themselves. They felt through their writings and through their counseling and through their diagnosis, especially in the physician. But then when the pharmacist stepped in, we had a pharmacist that had experienced addiction in their life. Do you think being women, being patient yourself and going through it, do you think that that heightens your ability to dig down into treatment and into the variances of treatment and the stigma that goes along with it, and sometimes the shame that goes along with it, and sometimes the partner stress that goes along with it? But I wanted to start off with you, Danielle, and just from your experience, and do you think that providers that go through something are better providers?
Absolutely. And you see that not just in medicine, you see that in anytime somebody starts their own company or gets involved with a certain niche, right? It's because of their experiences. And actually, right before we hopped onto this, and it's a little aside from infertility, but they showed the daughter of one of the teachers who was shot in Columbine. As we record this, it's the 25th anniversary of this shooting. And she used to say he was in the wrong place at the wrong time. He was in the wrong place at the wrong time. And then she found out over the 25 years, actually, she said now, and I'm getting chills just thinking about it, he was in the right place at the right time. And she is now a therapist for people who have gone through trauma like that. So it's not just the medical world. When we can use our own experiences and then bring that to change the way things are done and things are handled, the outcomes, the reach is so impressive. And in this case, you're literally talking longevity. You're talking future generations when we bring it back to infertility. And as Elise always says, fertility, right? Fertility. Because infertility has so many different causes. You two are more of the experts in that space than I am. But what the other thing that I've seen, and I just wanted to bring this up for a moment, is through my role as a pharmacist, I've been very fortunate to work with absolutely these top doctors. I go to conferences. I spent the last year working with a new FDA approved, it's new to the United States, not to Europe, test for preeclampsia. And in this space, I've worked with maternal fetal medicine specialists, and I've worked when I walk the event floor, right, when I'm not in a conference, and I've seen the best technology. And there's so many doctors out there who care and know, and the ones that have experienced it themselves, absolutely, or they've had extensive training on it. The collaborative teamwork, as mentioned, that makes all the difference in the world. So, and Todd, in your case, that was in treatment for recovery. In this case, if you can get a whole care team, and that's where advocacy really comes in. And as prior to my world becoming a pharmacist, and even now where I live in Las Vegas, our medical care is very fragmented. It's segmented. You have to get a referral to go to one doctor. They don't speak to another doctor. The electronic health record systems are all separate. They're not connected. I know there is connections in certain health systems or other parts of the country, but unfortunately not here. So it's very difficult for me to go and see great apps that are out there, great doctors that care and have collaborative teamwork. And then when I have patients reach out to me, which is pretty much daily, somebody's going, I'm not getting the care I need. My doctors aren't listening to me, or I had to wait a year before they would even do a lab test. There's a disconnect. And it's this team here and so many of our listeners and all of our colleagues that are in this space that can bridge that gap. As one of our other coworkers, our colleagues here always says, it's the I am cheese. So Jen, I'll give a comment out to you as well, because we have the Swiss cheese model of healthcare, and infertility falls right into those holes. Elise, your story just completely talked about that, even being a pharmacist yourself. So I know I just went on a bit of a tangent, but I did want to give a shout out to a couple of these apps that I was just talking about. One is Doveras, and I'm not sure if I am pronouncing this correctly. So it's Doveras Fertility. I met the head of product development, Nina Montgomery, and it's a pre-pregnancy cleanup app that uses lifestyle management, and they actually have evidence-based medicine. They have scientists on their board who have looked together as far as nutrition and other lifestyle changes to help decrease that time from you start to want to try to become pregnant to you actually become pregnant as well, and bridge that gap. And another one is Eat Lovu. I got to meet Dr. Santosh Pandipati. I would call him a rock star in this space. He's a maternal fetal medicine specialist. For those who don't know, they go on after becoming an obstetrician, another 3 to 4 years of a fellowship or additional residency time. Literally, another MFM told me it's as many years of education as a neurosurgeon. And they are literally rock stars in this space. And he created an app to, again, bridge that gap for comprehensive collaborative work to transform maternal outcomes, including infertility. There's a few others out there, but please use that technology to bridge, so you have people who have been through it themselves as part of your care team, and you have all the specialists. And Elise, someone like you, Lally, someone like you, were there as a profession for anyone going through this. So please reach out.
You know, Danielle, to tie back into what both you and Todd were sharing, you spoke of fragmentation in the system, right? Mm-hmm. And one of the things on my podcast is I try, well, also on Instagram, is to share evidence-based research. Last year, there was a pharmacy fertility article that came out, but it was in French. So that's why I didn't try to go through the motions of sharing that with everyone. But it was very interesting, because in a country where fertility coverage is nationalized, they can each get up to 4 free cycles of IVF. So it's the stigma is less there. But, and even though there's a lot of stigma, I want to point out that they had a questionnaire in this large academic fetal medicine reproductive center, asking them what else they want from this place. What can we do better, right? Even though they thought of a lot of things, they're offering a lot, destigmatizing. The thing that they most answered was they wanted better service in the medication aspects. They want more help with understanding administration, like subcutaneous injections, et cetera, drawing up things out of a vial. They want to know more about adverse events. And also they wanted to know how to best store and to waste their materials. And those aren't questions that are automatically happening at a center. Yes, there are nurses, but A, the nurses are not the pharmacists, and B, sometimes it's hard to get a hold of somebody with those questions. So it would be great to have pharmacists. They actually really wanted more help and we're completely receptive to having more pharmacy wraparound care to help them during their treatment.
Absolutely. That actually reminds me. So when I was a fertility pharmacist in the field, I managed our 24-hour Walgreens retail, and it had fertility inside, just like a traditional community pharmacy. But we also did medication administration. So you think about a single woman that's going through this type of treatment, they need to do progesterone injections every night. Like, the nurse isn't going to be available. The clinic's not open. And so what a great thing that we were open 24/7 and able to do that service. So absolutely. I think there is a huge shortage of fertility pharmacists in general, but also just healthcare providers that kind of understand what these patients are going through.
And Elise, you are board certified and you've done training on fertility medications. Can you tell us about that experience?
Well, Danielle, just to correct you, there's not a board certification or a special training in fertility. Not yet. I think that would be amazing. I know that ASHP is looking into additional certifications, but we're not there yet. I have board certified pharmacotherapy specialist, BCPS. And Lolly, I think you have board certification as well. There have been components in your continuing education as part of the BCPS where they had infertility in 2019. Though, not to criticize them, I would say, though, that they were pretty light on discussing treatments for the male side of infertility. They with one sentence talking about the male side. And I think now that we know just how important it is to consider the male factor side of infertility, hopefully their next iteration of that would be more inclusive.
We do have, so in partnership with the National Association of Specialty Pharmacy, so NASP, we do have 4 modules out there. So shout out to my clinical educator, Ann Scalia from Walgreens. She authored those 4 CEs. So that's definitely out there for any pharmacist that wants to learn more. But to your point, Elise, I think as pharmacists, we are well equipped to counsel patients. Most of them have questions on how do I inject? What's the difference between subcutaneous and IM? You have no idea how many patients do the wrong injection or the wrong timing. Me, myself, going through it, I injected Ganirelix twice one day because I forgot I'd done it. So and I'm a pharmacist. So we have to understand that patients are going to make mistakes. These aren't patients, they're not patients with diabetes that are used to injecting themselves every day. They have been completely healthy and now have this crazy regimen for 12 days that they have to inject 3 to 4 shots. So a lot of it is things that pharmacists can absolutely help with. But if they do want that extensive clinical, there's definitely continuing education out there.
I also want to echo what you're sharing about having made mistakes. I think I had, really weird side effects from the Menopur myself. And I know how to look that kind of information up. Oh, what caused this? How do I treat this, et cetera? But for the average woman out there who's just alone, often she will go to social media or to crowdsource her information. And then it would be great for them to have their local pharmacist as an actual touch point versus just searching and trying to get information from other women, because it's not necessarily, what the right treatment might be or the right answer. So it's wonderful if and when we have community pharmacists being able to support and accurately provide information and be available. So, and that kind of speaks to the National Infertility Awareness Week, right? We're trying to destigmatize this so that those who are trying to combat infertility are able to speak with somebody directly and not feel like they have to approach the internet because they can't talk about it.
Advantage to Lolly, your team is so deep through Walgreens' reach nationally that if a community pharmacist at a Walgreens has a patient that has questions right out of the get-go, can that pharmacist pull some kind of lever where they reach out to the specialty division, the fertility division, to keep it closed loop so that we don't lose patients to unanswered questions?
We do. So we have 60 pharmacies across the country that are specialized in fertility. So in these pharmacies, they've gone through the clinical training, they've gone through the operational training, but obviously we have 9,000. So 60 is a drop in the bucket. The idea would be that if a patient walks into a community pharmacy and the pharmacist cannot assist, it's more than just a needle or injection question, then yes, they could absolutely refer them to one of our 60 specialized fertility pharmacies.
And then I think of Dr. Plummer, Dr. Fields, the independent pharmacies that are out there are 18,000 plus that are out there. Boy, I mean, that's the whole reason I love podcasts, because it's a great way of saying, hey, we know you're busy, but here's a 20-minute podcast from Dr. Elise Fields. She's talking about fertility, talking about what's going on, just so that we get the community pharmacist understanding, where can I push my patients to a specialist if I don't have the knowledge, if it's not very specific? Because I would assume, as the consumer in the group, that there are a lot of questions that a patient, a person is going to have, a man or a woman or a couple or whatever, that we'd like answered, that our physician isn't going to necessarily know. You'd have to sign up to get a specialist. Maybe there's a way to get the information from a pharmacist who understands it first, and then start kind of, now you feel like an empowered, educated consumer moving to the next steps.
And I would say pricing is probably up there. Like, I think we could have an hour long podcast on pricing and you still would have questions. I guarantee you it is that complicated. And so I think the main point that I always stress pharmacists to understand is there is special fertility pricing by pharmacy. And so unfortunately, a lot of the independents wouldn't have access to that pricing. So yeah, they could get the drug in. And again, we're talking about the cash. So if a patient has managed care, absolutely, it goes through. That's fine. But I do just always reiterate the fact that there is special fertility pricing, and we never, ever want to be charging patients more than they need to be paying.
I think it's important to get employers on board as well. And my personal experience here is my senior tech was going through this, and 7 o'clock every evening, she would go into our little bathroom in the pharmacy and do her injection. And I thought, it takes a lot of... I haven't ever had to inject myself. So everyone who has to go through that, and there's many disease states and, dispensing those, from my background, dispensing those meds, it's not an easy thing to do. You have to be in the right mental mindset to do something like that. And if we can get the HR departments who are negotiating with the insurance companies to make sure that these medications are, or the whole, it's like a whole bucket. It's not just a medication, right? When you're experiencing infertility, that the support is there for employees. So important. So Lally, I know, just working for the company where you do they have something for employees directly as well?
Yeah. I mean, two thoughts on that. One is benefits, right? First, we need employers to pay for it. That's the first step. But then it's almost like a part-time job going through it. Sometimes you have to go to the doctor's office every day to see how well you're being stimulated, how the dosage is going to go up. So when I was going through it, I was in the field and I had to tell my boss, there's no way that I could say I need to miss this much work without my boss knowing. And so that's another thing where I think these conversations and Resolve does such a good job of ensuring that employers are open to it and are supporting patients, because you're right, not only do you need the time, and then you also need the coverage. So a lot of patients, will get part-time jobs at Walgreens, Amazon, Starbucks, companies that offer fertility benefits, because it's worth it. I mean, otherwise,
you brought up some pricing when we were chatting before. What is a patient going through this looking at in the United States?
Yeah. So it really, again, we could probably have a whole podcast conversation on this. So I'm talking about a patient that has coverage. Typically, it's anywhere between like $25,000 to $50,000 annual coverage for the year. But that includes most of the time the procedures as well, which that could be $25,000 to $30,000. So for a cycle, you're typically talking about $5,000 in meds, but it's always a good conversation. Like, most patients don't need one cycle, right? We usually tell you to stop after 6 cycles. So you really can't just plan that it's going to happen after one. And so the conversation becomes, do you use all your benefits on the medical and then pay cash for the drugs? Because typically that is a little bit, like, the drugs are cheaper than the procedures. So it's all very, very complicated. But ultimately, for a patient that is choosing to pay cash for the medications, then yeah, we just want to make sure that they are plugged into all the discount programs available.
Amazing. And what medications would you say anyone going through this should maybe know about or do some research or ask their pharmacist? Todd, you always say the pharmacist is the most accessible healthcare provider, right? Is there a dozen everyone should know about? Or I don't know if there's any ones that you want to bring up specifically.
I mean, I think so there's three manufacturers for like the main fertility drugs. And Elise, I know you know this like the back of your hand too, so feel free. So I think the main point is depends on your protocol, right? So most people are going to be on a stimulant, which is either Follistim or Gonal. And then Menopur, which is made by another company called Ferring. So kind of understanding those three are going to be the most expensive part of the procedure. And then you're going to have supportive meds, which pretty much any pharmacy can do, like your progesterone, estrogen, Lupron can kind of go either way. So it just really depends on your protocol. And so really, I know a lot of patients that price shop, which is I get it, like it's inevitable, but understanding what you're pricing, that like Follistim and Gonal are going to do the same thing, so you don't need both of them. So these little things, most like I would say 99% of pharmacists can help patients with.
And I want to add to the upcoming Maternal Rx podcast with Dr. Ina Liko, where she talks about pharmacogenetic variations in some of the fertility medications. So excited to hear that coming up as well.
Yeah. I guess go ahead.
I would want to say one more thing about what a community pharmacist might be able to do too by getting familiar. There was a paper that came out in late 2022 from somewhere, Metro Denver, Colorado. And they had surveyed again about 100 patients who trying to understand what kind of supplements they've been using and herbal treatments before trying to conceive. And they found that over 2/3 of those women who were seeking treatment for their fertility issues reported half use, and over half were currently using herbal and supplements. And when they checked it in the natural medicines database, they found that there were high rates of risks of drug-drug interactions and potentially harmful impact to pregnancy. Something I also took a look at when I dug into the paper is they found that there were sometimes there wasn't even information available, but they didn't have a pharmacist even involved in the study. And as a pharmacist, I could find those interactions in there and even answer that more. So that is something that somebody at a community pharmacy likely has access to, database interaction checkers. I don't know which ones Walgreens has, but that is an opportunity too, because somebody might be picking up supplements right by the counter when they're coming to pick up something else. And that's an immediate opportunity to try to talk to them about possible interactions for conception and or pregnancy.
That's a good point. So much supplements is a big thing. And I would think that there's a tendency, you know, the good and bad of the world of Google. I think we're all old enough to remember not having that access. And now in today's generation, that's not even thought of. So they immediately go to Google and they're going to say things like to Amazon, they're going to say it to buying sources. What's the best supplement for pregnancy or health to prepare for pregnancy? So I'm loving that you've said that, Elise, because community pharmacists can get between those mysteries and guide a patient as to what they should or should not be taking, depending on what IVF that they're starting into. Excellent.
Just like research has changed, so has medications just within the past year. Elise, you want to give us some updates? I know the newer weight loss medications are a hot topic right now related to pregnancy.
Oh my gosh, they are such a hot topic. Yeah. Holly, you can start. I'll just echo anything you haven't shared.
No. I mean, honestly, for fertility itself, I always kind of like, I wish we had more advances. I went through this process 12 years ago and the meds are exactly the same. I think more generics are going to be coming into the market, which definitely helps with the affordability. But I think when you're talking about technology, I think it's going to be more of like that AI, better genetics on embryos and things like that. But yeah, this has been a fun to watch.
So Axios just came out with an article. This is why Twerks is so important. This Week in Pharmacy, Ozempic's latest reported side effect, pregnancy. And this is on Axios just today. So, I mean, that's yeah. Big news.
I mean, we know that BMI has an effect in fertility. And so really, I don't know that many fertility experts are surprised by this. So when you fix that, then yeah, I think I'm excited about it as a fertility
Lally and Elise, do you think it's because of hormone balancing or is it the weight loss? Like the weight loss then leads to other body processes falling in line.
If you're having more sex because you're losing weight and you're feeling good about yourself. I mean, is there something to that? That's the guy in me. I'm sorry.
Confidence.
That's right.
Well, there's a couple different neurocrine factors going on, but interesting, like tirzepatide, right? That's the new one, Mounjaro, Zepbound. There was a study, Jessica Skelly, she is in the pharmacy program and she's at University of Alabama. She put together a paper in January, it came out, Journal of American Pharmacists Association. And she was talking about how tirzepatide has a statistically significant reduction in the area under the curve for concentration over time, max concentration, and time to max concentration when tirzepatide, aka Mounjaro, is given concomitantly with an oral contraceptive. So yes, the patients are being counseled that they should be stopping these medicines 2 months prior to attempting to conceive, but there can be a drug-drug interaction there. So even if they aren't necessarily trying, this could be happenstance as a result of the interaction between the two drugs.
Excellent. I have not read that. Another way that community pharmacy, I mean, I would imagine that that's popping up for us to counsel on because that, yeah.
Yeah, I'm happy to share this screen just for a quick second here and Todd, take it back for me after this, but you guys can take a look at this, the impact of tirzepatide, GLP-1 receptor agonists, and they did review other GLP-1 alones as well. But that's a paper I'd recommend, especially since it's pharmacy-driven.
Awesome.
Amazing. And now what other pipeline of medications are being explored?
Oh, you know what? Do want to say another thing about this too, that on the male side, we are seeing that there's a lot of caution right now with the reproductive urology community. They are excited by what they're seeing because they are seeing improvements in some of the male reproductive factors that are calculated into fertility. But there's still caution because we don't know what's going to happen when a man who's been taking it, you know, then the baby is having that coming from the sperm. So there's still just a lot we don't know. And it's limited right now to registries. There are trials going on for lactation for both the two new big drugs, the tirzepatide and semaglutide. But we still don't have all the information. It's just encouraging, though, to see that people are losing weight and getting pregnant, bottom line. But TBD on impacts long term. And oh, I guess I was also going to say too, what Lally had shared, that the drugs are still very similar now compared to what they were. There are a few exciting things in the pipeline though. Freya Biosciences, they had done a proof of concept study with Boston IVF. They're going to be moving into clinical trials that are targeting vaginal biomarkers. It's going to be a microbiota product, focusing a bit on lactobacillus. And I think that kind of ties into something too, where the pharmacy community could become more educated on the microbiome and how that might impact fertility. There's also a phase 2 product for kisspeptin receptors, and there's a phase 3 product for progesterone subcutaneous injections. But as Lally is sharing overall, it's not like oncology where you're seeing numerous products and numerous portfolios and just boom, 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 it's constantly happening. Reproductive medicine is not having as much advanced research, which is why it's great that Jill Biden had announced this $100 million advanced research projects for health, ARPA-H, to launch the Sprint for Women's Health. It's going to fund discoveries in women's health. So on the horizon, we have good things coming.
I know a whole lot about ARPA-H, so anyone interested, reach out to me, and I'm happy to connect you and tell you more about the program. Really, really exciting opportunity. And I do have to hop off though. So I want to thank everyone for this panel. And oh my gosh, the future. I'm really excited to see what's around the corner.
Hey, I'd like to make a point. Pharmacists, pharmacy, research, clinical trials, advancement in rare disease treatment. Guess who it's being led by? Women. Women. 62% of our women now are pharmacists. And I'm talking on a podcast right now with three of those leaders. So I'm very excited. I am a father of four daughters. So I like the stats and I'm squeezing so hard. I'm like, please, my little baby, 12-year-old Lola, please be a pharmacist for daddy. Please, someone be a pharmacist for daddy. But we'll see what happens.
And Elise, I know you have a whole lot more to share, and I hope you guys can get to what to say and what not to say to somebody going through infertility, because I think I've said things I probably shouldn't have like phrases, when are you going to get pregnant? And, you know, when are you going to have kids? And not knowing the consequences, or my other world about pregnancy, vomiting. If somebody's going through infertility, don't talk about what happens when you're pregnant, right? Hold that conversation. And Lally, you mentioned pregnancy after infertility treatment. It's a whole nother world than pregnant women who have not gone through infertility. So looking forward to hearing the rest of the conversation. Thank you, everyone.
Well, thank you. And I have a hard cap as well right now, but a great resource for this would be Resolve. The Resolve website talks about how to share with someone struggling with fertility, how to approach that, how to have a conversation, and yes, what to say and what not to say.
Excellent. Well, this has been awesome. I thank you all for being part of This Week in Pharmacy. If you're listening and you want more information about today's topics, please reach out to these three experts. Make sure you get on LinkedIn with them and connect. And Dr. Fields just mentioned Resolve. That's at resolve.org. And we can't wait to hear more. So all three of you, obviously, will be hearing from Dr. Plummer on Maternal Rx. But the rest, Lally, I can't wait to get you on a follow-up podcast. And Elise, we have to do a mashup with your podcast as well. So I can't wait to follow up with you.